Welcome to the Bubbles Brunchcast with your hosts, Aaron and Kayla.
Hello, hello. Thank you for joining us today here on Bubbles Brunchcast. I'm your host, Aaron Ambergy.
And Kayla Maynard.
And today we have a very special guest, our friend Amanda. She's here to talk about her journey as she was a gestational surrogate years ago. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Thank you so much for being on, Amanda. You doing okay today?
I am. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course. So we got some questions for you. Can you describe gestational surrogacy for those who may not be familiar with it?
Yes, I can do it in several different terms. Sometimes I like to be a little funny about it, but we'll try to not do that this time.
Be funny about it.
So basically, I was a babysitter. I just happened to make the baby. So as a gestational surrogate, I was a part of a program in which I was a babysitter. And essentially, we use somebody's egg and somebody's sperm, and you make a baby and you put it in the belly. And that's just what happens, is I was the holder of that, because sometimes people can get pregnant.
Like me. So. But yeah, if you go back a couple episodes, I talk about my journey and my fertility journey. But yeah, so you were the... You were the carrier. They put the baby into your uterus, or the embryo into your uterus. So yes. Mom went through IVF.
Yep.
Okay.
And yeah, the mom went through IVF. She actually did it several times, but yeah. So basically, they go through IVF. They do a retrieval process for her, and then they. Basically make it do the things in the lab, and then you go through a transfer.
And so they transferred, instead of transferring it back into her, they transferred it to you.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And so, like, there's also what they call traditional surrogacy, and that's if you use your own eggs.
Right. So a part of the process for being a surrogate is, do you want to do that, right? So you have the ability to do that. However, that's not something that I wanted to do.
Because it would technically be your child.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what you have to be. There's a lot of things that you have to be comfortable with as a surrogate. And if you are not 100% comfortable with those things, then you should not be a surrogate.
Yeah.
So while we were going through the process of IVF, I actually had no idea what it was, any parts or pieces in this journey that I signed up for. And I'll tell you it's a journey because it's a very long process. But, you know, I got to learn about what it is, like the whole process of how complicated it is to be a surrogate or just to go through IVF in general. And then, you know, there's all kinds of science out there about whether you need bed rest after the transfer, whether you don't need bed rest after the transfer, the doctors that you use, there's so much science behind it. That, you know, I was really young when I did it. I don't know if I knew 100% what that was like until I got it.
But you didn't know until you were in the thick of it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So why did you decide to become a gestational surrogate?
So it's actually kind of funny. So I had my two babies, and my babies are 19 months apart. And my ex-husband and I didn't really want any more children because we were broke. We were really broke. So we were like, hey, we don't want to have any more of our children. And during that time period, my daughter was a toddler. My oldest was a toddler. And she was fascinated with this movie that Amy Poehler and Tina Fey played in, which was called Baby Mama. And that's where I learned, you know, I learned that that was an actual thing. So I looked at my ex-husband and I was like, I could do that. I'm really great at being pregnant. I am. I'm great at being pregnant. I love to be pregnant. I just don't want to take care of any more of my children. I don't want to be more responsible for more humans coming into this world.
Sure.
So I started Googling and I found out it was a thing. And that's how I became a surrogate.
That's awesome. So baby mama inspired you?
Such a good movie.
It really
though.
Did. Which, you know, it just seems kind of silly because people get into this and they're like, I felt this calling. I did not. My daughter was watching a comedy movie and I learned a lot about it. And it really was a hilarious movie.
Yeah.
And I don't think she even realized like what the movie was about during that time period, but she liked the background music. So we played it all the time.
Yeah.
And then I started Googling, you know?
That's awesome. It's amazing. So did you go through an agency or an individual? Like person to person?
I went through an agency. I will say that if you ever thought about being a surrogate, that's one thing that helps protect you. They have your best interest and the intended parent's best interest at heart.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not... And it just makes it to where all the legal stuff you don't have to know about because there's lots of legal things that go with it.
You don't
have to know any part of that. Also, you get to, because the company that I used going through this, I actually made a lot of friendships during this the whole process. I got to do a lot of things. I made a lot of friendships. And I'm grateful for that. Later on, I found out my cousin had tried to use a service. And they ended up just taking her money.
Oh, so, no.
Yeah. And I didn't even know that was a thing, but it is. And I wanted to make sure that whatever it was, I was protected 100%. And that's what they help with.
Absolutely. And then so it protects the surrogate and the intended parents.
Absolutely. It does both. Because you have somebody, you have lots of people in this whole process. But you also have a psychologist as well. Part of the process that mm-hmm. you talk to kind of on a regular basis ish like if you have any issues in the process with the intended parents or you're having communication breakdown or something, they're there for you. They help you through that. That's what they do day in, day out. So I was fortunate enough to have that, and I don't know if I would have thought the whole thing was as successful as it was if I didn't have that. And the fear, you know, you have no fear going into it because you're like, oh, that everything is covered, even to the point where you get life insurance.
Wow.
The intended parents have to buy life insurance for you.
That makes sense, but and not fun to think about.
Yeah.
Right. It makes sense.
You probably wouldn't even think about that, right? You probably, I have my life insurance, but this is different.
Yeah. It makes sense to me. So which agency, do you mind sharing which agency you went through?
Oh, I don't mind at all. They're actually known all across the world. Lots of, actors and stuff have used them. It's called CSP,
mm-hmm.
Center for Surrogate Parenting. Actually, it's the company.
Wow,
that's kind of cool. So I'm sure there was like a lot of testing, or were there like qualifications, or a lot of things that you had to go through to start the process?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So you start by just filling out a form, saying that you're interested. You know, it's just easy. You're interested. This is what it is. Then you have lots of things that you have to agree to before that you get any deeper in the process. And there was a couple of things that I was like, I don't really know if I could agree to those 100%. You have to keep in your mind that you don't actually get to call the shots with the baby.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, because it's not your baby. So you have to go into it going, hey, if there's something actually wrong with the kid, I don't actually get to make the decision what happens, right? Mm-hmm. You don't get to... the decision you get is whether to do it or not,
mm-hmm.
whether to have another cycle or not. But in all reality, it's their kid. So you have to be comfortable with lots of things. And, you know, it took me a minute because I actually had talked to a counselor through this. And I was like, you know, this... I don't know if I feel comfortable 100% with this. And they were like, I'm telling you right now, don't do this if you are not on board with everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to be on board with terminating the pregnancy if something was wrong with the baby and the parents wanted to terminate the pregnancy. And, you know, it's devastating, but at the same time, it's not your baby. So I think that's really where my mentality was throughout the whole thing was, this is not my baby. It's not my babies, because I had two of them, but it's not, they're not mine.
Right.
So the parents get to call the shots.
Yeah, that makes sense, but yeah. it's not easy to think of in to think about, or nobody wants to think about what if something goes wrong and I have and I need a termination.
That's another reason why I like the agency. It's like they give you all of this stuff up front before you meet anybody, before you're invested, before anything happens. You get to go back to this thing that said, hey, I agreed to this, instead of having to agree to it during the thick of things.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what qualifications does one need to be a surrogate?
Honestly, I think the only qualification that needed was in place, I would say, for this agency was that you had to have a kid, a successful pregnancy on your own. Mm-hmm. So you can't go into this process and this be your child experience, having a child experience. You had to have one, at least one on your own.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes sense, though, because you don't want your first baby to be, well, they want to make sure you can bring a baby into the world.
Yes.
And you don't want the baby, your first birthing experience, to have it ripped out of your arms.
Yeah, yeah. They just, you know, it's also, it's for your mental health, too. Mm-hmm. A lot of things are for your mental health. The reason why we're doing this up front is for you. The reason why, you know, we're thinking about this now is for you.
Yeah. So how long did the whole process take?
It was very long. It was very long. Yeah. It's, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, it probably took, you know, maybe a year for you. It actually was not. I actually signed up in the spring of 2010. And then I had the babies in December of 2011. So mm-hmm. Your process could be shorter or could be longer. It depends on how many rounds of IVF you do. But your first 3-4 months is all the logistics, right? Mm-hmm. It is your, you know, agreeing to all the things. It is meeting with a counselor. My ex-husband and I, we had to meet with a counselor. We had to fly to Annapolis and meet with a counselor. And she had to sign off on us doing it at all.
Yeah.
And then once she signed off on everything, you kind of started the ball rolling. But it's like a speed up, slow down situation. Like, oh, okay. I'm going to give you some couples to look at. You determine which ones you like, and then we'll set up a meeting with them, and that's part of the process. And then it kind of stalls out for a minute, right? Like everything, you know, your cycle stalls, like everything stalls out for a minute. So you have to be pretty patient because it's not quick and it's not easy.
Do they put you on birth control?
Yes. It also depends on your birth control. Like if you are already on birth control, mm-hmm. then they have to like track your cycle. You know, I was one of those people that did not really do any of that. I didn't have a normal cycle. I was like, oh, it just comes every month. You know, when it comes, it comes.
Yeah.
Mine wasn't like calendar, this, that, and the other. So you have to track your cycle for a while. You also have to figure out which doctors you're using for IVF. Like, are you using a clinic local to you, to them? Anywhere in the world, who's going to do all of your blood work and your checks after the transfer? There's just lots of parts and pieces to it.
Wow. That is amazing. And now how many retrievals, transfers and retrievals did you have to do? So for those of you who don't know, a retrieval is when they take the eggs out.
Yeah.
And then a transfer is when they take the embryo, which is the egg and sperm combined. Then it matures and goes to blast. And then they put it back in.
Yes. So, and when they put it in, that's a different time frame. Like how long it takes mm-hmm. and all that stuff for it to actually, is it a 3 or 4 or 5 day transfer, any of those? Mine was 6 days actually. So I had 3 rounds, but the doctor that we first used in the States required a mock cycle. So one, I had to get on birth control to track a cycle. Mm-hmm. And then I had to do a whole mock cycle of IVF.
Mm-hmm.
And then you did another, like a legitimate round of IVF. And I did that and it was not successful. And the worst part about that was it was right at Christmas time.
Oh.
Yeah. And the intended parents that I was matched with, that I love dearly, They were upset and they didn't know if they want to continue. Because, you know, keep in mind, a lot of people at this point in their life, they get a gestational surrogate, they've been let down a lot.
Sure.
They've been let down a lot. They've had either some trauma or something to do with that. So we took a break. We took a couple of weeks, Christmas, I believe is what it was, and just to figure out what we want to do next. I was like, I'm here for whatever you want to do. If you want to stop, I'm here for you. If you want to keep going, I'm here for you. So whatever that meant. And then we switched doctors, and we had another round of IVF, and that one took.
So it just took two transfers? That's awesome.
Yeah.
A lot of times the first one doesn't work for whatever reason.
A lot of times it doesn't. And, you know, for people that go through IVF, and I've heard so many stories about IVF since I started, you know, because I'm not really guarded when it comes to whether I was a surrogate or not. And so when people find out, they instantly tell me, like, their journeys and all that stuff. And, and I have to, a lot of the times they're like, oh, I'm getting ready to start. I'm like, okay, let me help you prep for this. Your first time might not be successful.
Right.
You know, so just prepare for that.
Absolutely. I mean, this is not to make it about me, but I've had five transfers and none of them worked.
Yeah. It happens.
And zero babies.
Yeah, it happens. And, you know, the worst part is the emotional roller coaster, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it is, you know, trying to put myself in the mom and dad's shoes, right? The intended parent's shoes, and saying, you know, you don't want to continue, that's okay. That really is okay.
Mm-hmm.
I understand this is a super sensitive time period, and I know that you wanted this really bad and you're really, you know, focused on that. But if you want to try again, I'm here. And if you want to try a different doctor, we can try a different doctor, whatever you want to do. But we pretty much knew that the last transfer was going to take. So usually there's like 3, 4, or 5 day I would like to say, like, incubation period. It's really like when the embryo is developing.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually called me and said, hey, do you mind if we wait another day? They're like, these look really good, but they're going to look even better tomorrow.
So sure.
Mine was 6 days.
So you had a fresh transfer?
Yes, I believe that's what it was.
Yeah. So, yeah, they weren't frozen?
No, they weren't frozen.
Okay.
I was like, what?
Did they get genetic testing? So they wouldn't have gotten genetic testing either, because you have to freeze them to do that.
Yep, they didn't.
Okay. And they transferred two?
Yep.
And they both took, and you ended up with twins?
Aww. Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm.
That's boy, amazing. Girl. Aww.
Yeah.
So, how much did this cost for the intended parents?
I would like to say, start to finish. So, let me tell you about what's also included in their cost, because it's expensive.
Yeah.
It's not for the faint of heart, because it's a lot of money. So
yeah.
You might do this. You might do all of this, and it still doesn't work. So keep that in mind. Like, you might get a gestational surrogate, and you do 2 to 3 rounds, and it still doesn't work, and you still have invested this money in it. So included in this cost for the intended parents, I had to go to Annapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Where we, all of the surrogates at that time period would meet once a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So they take care of my flight, my hotel room, all of those things, up until the point where I couldn't travel anymore. And they started doing that as soon as I was matched. So through that whole like year and a half, they had to do that every quarter. I was put on bed rest, so they got out of some of that, but it's a part of the price. They also had to like set up a trust for the money. They had to pay for life insurance for me. They had to pay for the medical bills. Like, I think all in total was $100,000, I want to say.
Wow.
I want to say. And keep in mind, that was in 2010, 2011.
So.
It's a little. It'd be more
today,
most likely.
Oh, yeah. With inflation, how it is.
Have Lord, you seen the price of eggs? No.
Yeah. You know, a lot of their costs. Well, and the difference is their cost is, it's not set, right?
Right.
Because each round of IVF is different. The doctor you use, and then coming back and doing all the blood work and all that stuff. So that's going to increase your cost. Because I had to have a C-section, that increased their costs. They also had to pay for housekeeping for me because I was on bed rest for several months off and on. So all of that stuff, remember, like, the agency is supposed to be here for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that was, hey, she's been on bed rest. We're going to cover housekeeping.
Yeah.
You're out your mind. I have two little ones. Please come in my house and clean it.
Yeah, like, why would we say no? No, bring them in.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how did you get matched with the intended parents?
So during the part of the process, like, after I saw, I was signed off by the psychologist, I was given some couples to look at. Mm-hmm. And get to know, I can't remember 100% what you get, like, from them, but they give you, like, a story about who they are, you know, what their life is like, all that stuff. And then whoever you feel like you connect with, at that point, you get to meet in person. So we flew to Annapolis, and we met in person, and I was like, I'm obsessed. I was like, this is it. And they, keep in mind, they're waiting to make sure that that's what I want, right?
So, sure.
You know, they have to make the decision whether I am great for them and vice versa. So she was so nervous afterwards. She was like, I wonder if they're going to choose us, you know, like that kind of stuff. And because she's super cute. But yeah, so that's, you just get a list and a story and you just choose what pulls at you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what drew you to this couple?
I think it was a lot of their backstory, and to me, they were down-to-earth people.
Yeah.
I was kind of looking for. Also, I was really young when I did this. I was in my early 20s.
So, yeah.
You know, I was kind of looking for somebody that's, you know, that I could connect with, that would understand, like, you know, I have kids of my own and that kind of stuff. And you also want to think about this as a part of your match process, is whether you want to have a relationship afterwards. You know, it's always a touchy subject. I'm pretty good at removing the feelings from a lot of this stuff. But, like, do you want to have a relationship? Do the intended parents want to have a relationship? Because neither one of you, maybe they do and you don't. That's probably not a good idea to match with that. If you're
right.
Like, if you think that after you have the baby that you're going to have some feelings there, and they want you to stay in the baby's life, that might be hard for you. So that might be a reason why you choose not to, on that set of parents.
Do you keep in touch with the parents? That's what I was going to ask you, with the parents and the kids.
So originally I did. Over the years, I get a text message on Mother's Day. I see them on social media, but that's pretty much it. Like, I think their kids know about me-ish. Mm-hmm. But I just see their pictures on social media, and that's all I need. You know, I just want to make sure they're happy and healthy and they're good. That's it. But I didn't. Some of my surrogate friends are still really good friends with the intended parents and the kids and stuff like that. I just have had a lot of life changes since I did it. Like,
sure.
I said, I was in my early mid 20s when I did it, and I've had a lot of life changes. So I can't imagine they can keep up with all that.
Right.
So. But I like to see their faces, and that's all I need.
That's sweet. So would you ever consider doing it again?
I almost did it again. I actually was rematched again. And then I went through the process again. My delivery with the twins was not great.
Mm.
And it wasn't anything to do with the babies, but I just had some bleeding issues and stuff like that, and it kind of scared me from having any more.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I'll do it again, and I got into the process a little quicker this time with the second one, but where I was in my life was not the best situation for doing it again. It really wasn't. I want to say I had after postpartum with a single baby is very different than postpartum with twins. It sounds really silly, but every pregnancy that you have is very different.
From, mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to have some similarities, but even if you have the same gender back to back, you're going to have lots of things that are different. And for me, postpartum was very different with the twins. Very different. I never even had a night sweat in my life. Turns out you have those after twins. Your body says, hey, you freaked us out. So we're just going to make you sweat a lot at night. So I had matched with another couple, and then we had one round, and the lining, this is sounds really gross, but the lining of my uterus was not getting fluffy enough for a transfer. And I was like, all right, this is it. This is literally everything. God, everybody telling me it's not the time to do this. Let's not do this. But I would have. I think, you know, I probably would even now. Like, but I still would have to get over some of the trauma of my last delivery.
Absolutely. I mean, that's scary. And the postpartum stuff. Did you have any postpartum depression or anxiety? And feel free to tell me to mind my own business.
No, you're totally fine.
Okay.
I don't even know if I knew what that was. Being a little younger, and I feel like back then people didn't talk about it as much as they do now. You know, like
sure.
Now it's a thing, and they even ask you questions like after you get done with your delivery and you go back to the doctor for checkups. They even ask you questions about it now, but that's not really, it wasn't a concept in my brain. Now, the fortunate thing that I did get to do was have several weeks off with my babies. So I got to have lots of weeks off with my babies, recuperate, and that's what I loved. So I don't think so. I just think that because I had a C-section with my daughter, I knew what I was going in for.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I figured out with the twins after I had them that if you get Spanx, they're your best friend ever after a C-section, because you don't want your midsection to move at all. And when you're buckling your kids in to the car, you use your midsection. When you're driving, you use your midsection. So you sneeze, you're like, I don't ever sneeze, and now I'm randomly sneezing, and it's very uncomfortable. So I found out about Spanx, but I don't believe I had postpartum depression. It just took me, it felt like my postpartum was so long. And then I had them in December, and then I separated from my husband my ex-husband, the following like September.
Okay.
August, September. So I feel like the postpartum just lasted longer.
That makes sense. So was it, this is probably the question on most people's mind, was it difficult to hand them over once you had them?
That's everybody's question. and no. So I gotta tell you a little bit about my mama, because it kind of matters. So
sure.
My mama loves babies. My mama loves children. She had five, and she has a gajillion grandchildren at this point, even some great grandchildren.
Oh.
But my mama, when I told her I was doing it, she was like, Lord, child, you are the one. You are the one that does all the things that everybody has to worry about, you know, all the stuff. She's like, there's no way, Amanda, that you're going to ever be able to give those babies up. And I said, you're out of your mind. I have two kids under two. I don't want any more of my own babies. So, but this way, this other family gets to have babies that would not normally get to have their own kids.
Sure.
So I had to do it. And I tried to explain it for 9 months to my mama. I had the twins, and then I came out of surgery and saw my ex-husband and my husband at the time, and I had lost like a lot of blood and stuff like that, and he was like, you need to call your mama. You know, because I am super attached to my parents, and my mom met them, so she didn't just meet the intended parents. Because a set of grandparents came up, the baby's uncle came up, like everybody came to Kentucky. Aww. For the birth of the baby, and like they drove up like mad dash driving. And they weren't, you know, they weren't super close, but they were all there. And so my mama got to meet all of them. And she was like, okay, got it. I didn't know why you did. So for me, it really wasn't. I don't know. You have to have this sort of feeling about it. They're not your babies. It's your babies. Even if you use your egg or whatever, they're still not your babies, honey. So, you know, these parents have been waiting since we met a year and a half ago to have babies and see their babies. So once you see like their face and you see them connect with the babies or baby, and you're like, that's it. No, I didn't have any. However, I was one of like the first few surrogates during this time period. Now it's like, I think it's gotten more popularity and there's different protocols now. Mm-hmm. So what happened after I had the twins is they wheeled me to labor and delivery in this nice room. It was a great room. And then like 2 hours later, maybe even longer than that, I can't remember. I was in and out of it, but I woke up in a different room. And I woke up in the Mothers Without Babies ward. And that's something that I will never forget. Because the hospital was worried that I was going to do something with the baby. So they removed me from the babies.
Oh.
While I was, you know, still recovering from a surgery, a major surgery.
Yeah.
In which I lost lots of blood. So I woke up and I was like, what am I doing? Where am I? And I was in a room a quarter of the size. It was not a happy place. Like, I cannot imagine if you actually had a stillbirth or something like that, and that's where they put you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. It was terrible. It was not good. So the hospital thought something was weird. And, you know, thought it was that kind of situation. I'm like, yeah, you mind. Even my like intended parents were like, why is she that far away? One of the babies went to NICU. And so they were like, why are you so far away from us? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like this. And I was like, it's okay. I'm only going to be here another day or so. It's not that big a deal. But it actually, like, that's one thing I'll never forget about that.
I know, because I'm sure you don't want to hear the cries and all the things that go along with, you know,
having a baby.
Yeah, I get that. It was tragic,
but probably not a.
They should have at least waited till you were awake
and told you what was going on.
Yeah, not just surprise, wake up here.
Yes, it was. The really interesting part about it was, you know, where it wasn't popular when I was doing it was I had went in to work one day, and it was like maybe like 2 or 3 weeks later, you know, I used to take the kids up to work to see all the friends, all the people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guy's wives worked at UK. And she was like, oh, apparently she came home that night and told him, oh my God, your coworker had her baby. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody in all the hospitals were talking about that I was a surrogate. Like,
wow.
Yes. I was like, oh, good to know.
What about all the HIPAA stuff? Yeah.
I think, you know, he also was like, hey, keep an ear out in case my friend goes into labor, you know, that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
it was really interesting because it was to that end of 2011, and that's when surrogacy started to gain some popularity, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even Elton John had started to use his agency the next year or two, maybe even during the same time period. I think he used them twice. Elizabeth Banks, another actress, started using them. Like, everybody was starting to use them.
Wow. That's so cool that you're in good company.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, could be worse, right? But I think everybody does wonder that. I think that, you know, maybe the media has scared people and said, oh my God, she was a surrogate and she's keeping the baby. And I'm like, that's actually not really a thing.
No.
You know, that's why you use the agency and you have the psychologist and you have all of the stuff, because they want to make sure that it's right for you and for everybody involved.
Right. You just can't come in off the streets and say, I'm going to be a surrogate today.
Yeah, there is no willy-nilly about any of this. Like, I've seen some stuff that's like, oh, I put an ad out in the paper. You're out of your mind. This is a body. This is a body. You know, you're doing all these things. It's so much work and so much time off of work.
Mm-hmm.
In the position that I was in, I was an hourly team member, so it wasn't a huge deal if I was missing.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I, you know, like, I was on bed rest a little bit of August of 2011, a little bit. They were like, I went to the doctor for a checkup, and they're like, oh, you're cramping. Do you know what that is? And I was like, I'm just cramping. They're like, no, that's actual contractions, and you're not due until January, so we're going to need you to hold them in a little longer. And I was like, well, if I could, like, you know, help, I would. And then you can't
called bed rest. So I spent a whole weekend on bed rest and went into the doctor, I think on Monday or Tuesday, and they were like, okay, looks like things have calmed down. So you're going to be okay. And I had just like went to the beach like the previous week and tried to like walk on the pier mm-hmm. and like walk around. And I was like, my parents are with me, and I had, of course, my babies. And I was like, oh, mama, I don't feel good. I was like, something's going on. I was like, my belly's tightening. And she was like, oh, absolutely not. We're going to go back. We're going to go back to the hotel, and you're going to go sit your butt down. And then I made it through September. I was like, yes, no bed rest. September, did not make it through October. Most of October I was on bed rest through Thanksgiving. Like, I specifically told my doctor, because my doctor is super down to earth. She's fabulous. But in all honesty, it was the high-risk doctor that was going to deliver these babies, not my regular OB. Mm-hmm. I was a little sad about that. Mm-hmm. But I was like, can I please go to my family's Thanksgiving? I just want to eat. I just want to get out of the house, and I want to eat. You know, by that point, I was large and in charge with these babies.
Sure.
I wasn't sure, like, how much food was actually going to fit in there, but I was like, I want to go. Please, I will go, and I will sit. I promise. Like, I can get carried to the car. If you let me out of the house, I'm like a caged animal at this point. Let me out. And they said, fine, you could go the one day, but you will not do anything, and you will sit the whole time. And I was like, I will sit the whole time. I get to eat and be with my family. So I did get to have Thanksgiving with them. And then the very beginning of December, they were born. It was like the funniest story about how these babies came out. They were like, I've been in here long enough. There's no more time. They did not want to stay in anymore. And my ex-husband had come home from work. He was working third shift. And I was up. It was like 5 in the morning. You know, I was miserable. I couldn't sleep. Because you can't do anything. You're hot. You're uncomfortable. You're big, very large. Also, being 5'2", your whole person is like leaning forward because of the weight of the baby.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, he came home from work and he had started a diet. I was like, this is the very wrong time to do this. But you know, you do. And I had a glass of milk, which is strange because I don't ever drink just milk. I did with my pregnancy with my daughter, and she is lactose intolerant. So I don't drink milk anymore because I apparently drank so much that my kid has an allergy to it. I was sitting down on the couch with him having a conversation, and then I was like, oh, I'm gonna go back to bed. I had a glass of milk, and I go, he's like, yeah, I'm ready to lay down too. He had a hamburger, ready to lay down. 5 in the morning, I had a hamburger.
And third shift will do stuff to you.
Yes, it will do some weird things to you.
Yeah.
So I went to the bathroom, and I had sat there, like, keep in mind my water did not break naturally with either one of mine. Mm-hmm. My and were stubborn straight out the gate. My water never broke, so I didn't really know what that was like. And I went to the bathroom, and I sat there literally like 30 seconds longer than normal. And he is like shouting from the bedroom. He was like, are you all right in there? And I was like, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure my water just broke. And he was like, what? You know, he's like, into full action, going around the house, looking like a chicken with his head cut off, flapping everywhere, not doing anything. There was nothing that he was doing that was helping anybody or anything move out of the house. And the parents were in town because the doctor had said, you need to get them here. We're trying to keep these babies in as long as they will, but they're not going to stay much longer. So I called them. Once I didn't answer, it's 5 in the morning.
Sure.
I called them twice, and I was like, hey, you sleeping? She was like, oh, wait, what? I was like, hey, are you ready to have these babies? Because they're coming. And she's like, what? What? What's it? I was like, yes, they're coming. So we're on our way to UK ER. So buckle up. You're getting ready to be parents. At the same time, I had both of my children. And at that point, Liam was 2 and mm-hmm. Liv was 3 and a half. Okay, so you basically just grab and go at that point. any movement is direct opposite of what you want because they're toddlers. So I'm like trying to pack their bag. They're going to Aunt Holly's and called Holly. She gonna meet us, you know, all the jazz. And she was just as excited because that's Aunt Holly. So I'm like, yes, we're gonna meet you there. I'm like stuffing the bag full of clothes, like all the stuff, while he's doing laps. Running laps. I don't even know. Like, I can't even tell you what he was doing because I don't think he knew. He's sleep deprived and he's excited because we don't know what's about to happen. You know, got these babies, you know, they're not ours. And he's like, who are you on the phone with? I said, the parents of the baby. That's the parents of the babies, you know? And he was like, okay, valid point. You know, so got these kids in tow. And I was like, grab a child, grab any of them. Just grab a child and let's get out of the car. And in this process, it probably took us like 5 to 10 minutes longer than it should have because nobody knows what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, we done woke these toddlers up and they're flapping around everywhere. He's doing circles and I'm like, I'm just trying to call people. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to pack a bag. Well, like a day or two later, I talked to Aunt Holly, you know, checked on my babies. And she was like, do you know what you packed? And I said, absolutely not. You're lucky. you're lucky you got a bag. And Aunt Holly was actually there for Liam's birth and all that stuff. So she was pretty used to me doing all the things.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, you packed 7 pair of underwear for Liv and nothing else. I got 7 pair of underwear for Liv. So that's what you put in there. I said, well, he wasn't functioning. I wasn't functioning. Nobody was functioning, even though, you know, we were surprised, but we should not have been. We've been trying to hold the babies in.
Yeah.
He was like, good point. Good point. I was like, yeah, I don't know. But, you know, she stayed, like my kids stayed at Aunt Holly's frequently. Like every once in a while, they just go stay at Aunt Holly's. So she's like, I got all the stuff. Don't worry about it. They're fine. I'm like, thank God somebody's got their life together. You know, it was a great time. I would say the whole program was fun. The least fun was the shots because nobody likes them. No, nobody likes them. Nobody ever says, hey, that's what I want to do on a Saturday, is go an IVF shot. So a part of like going and the quarterly things we had was you got to meet surrogates at every step of the process. So if you were brand new, everybody went around the table and shared their story. You might be sharing your birth story. You might just be sharing what you're like, you just matched. You mm-hmm. might be sharing that you are starting IVF and you're scared out of your mind about these shots because you've never done any before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to see everything. So I kept asking everybody who was like pregnant. Also, if you're pregnant, they're like, you know, I'm 30 weeks. This will be my last one. I can't travel after this one. You know, that you got to literally meet like in every part of the process. So you got to ask lots of questions.
Yeah.
Questions about the shots. So keep in mind, I've never taken shots for anything. You know, not like my, you know, my son who's special and has to have allergy shots.
Sure.
Like, I never had any of that stuff. And I was like, are they terrible? And they'd be like, oh, they're not that bad. I was like, don't downplay it. Do not downplay it.
Don't you lie to me.
It's not great. The worst part is they're like, oh, yes, you get to get off the progesterone shots. So I'm like, that's fabulous. They're like, you're pregnant. This is how much longer you get to be on the shots. And then this is what happens after the shots is the inserts. The progesterone inserts are the most vile things. Like, give me the shot. Give it back. Because those things were gross.
Yeah.
I was like, can I have the shots, please? I'll take them back. I'm sorry that I cussed every day that I had to have those. I'll take them back. And it was super gross. And I remember the day after the transfer, I had to do bed rest.
Mm-hmm.
The successful transfer. And after I was let off of bed rest, it was, you know, I was like springing into action.
Yeah.
Keep it down. And we had left where we had the transfer from. We had to fly home. And I was sick in the airport.
Oh, no.
I was already sick in the airport. And I was like, I looked over at my ex-husband, my husband at the time, and I was like, pretty sure this worked. And he goes, well, they were pretty good, you know. He's trying to be a part of the process without being a part of the process, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm so sick. I'm so sick. And my connection was in Charlotte. And at the time, Charlotte had the shortest connection times. 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Sprint my sick butt across the airport. And I was like, I'm not going to make it. I was like, I have to have something fizzy. I'm so sick. And I'm like, this is the part I didn't like. This is the part I didn't like. And my first trimester, you're so tired your first trimester anyways. Whoa. Double the fun. With the twins, double the fun.
I 4 o'clock in the
afternoon, I was ready to go to bed for 12 hours. I was like, this is not a good time when, you know, I have to be a mommy and I have to do mom things. And my ex-husband, you know, like I said, worked third shift. And he's like, oh, I'm off. I'm like, you're off to the races. I'm over here trying to take a nap. my kids are just crazy. They're teenagers now and they're still crazy. They still waller all over me, do all the things, you know. So I'd be sitting there on the couch and they'd just be like crawling up my person and then smacking my face. Mom, you gonna wake up? I'm not. Mom, take 5 minutes. Let me just take 5 minutes. But they don't remember it.
They don't remember it. How did they feel at the time? How did you explain it to them?
Well, you know, we just hid it in plain sight. Like I said, I was large. Both babies, one was under 5 pounds and the other one was at 5 pounds, and they were 5 weeks early.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I make large babies. It's very unfortunate for somebody who's my height and weight.
you're all baby when you get pregnant.
Absolutely, 100%. Like, people used to be like, hey, and then I just whip my belly around, you know. we were buying maternity clothes because it could not fit in any of my clothing, and I thought I was done having children, you know. After my son came,
yeah,
all of all the stuff. And the lady working at the maternity store looks at Liv and goes, oh, are you having a brother or sister? She's like, what? Ah, she was sassy. She's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I was like, oh, God. I looked at my ex-husband and I was like, oh, Jesus. Are we going to have to tell her? And he's like, nah. We talk about it. Like, I talk about it all the time. Like, if anybody ever asks me, hey, how many children have you had? Well, I've given birth to 4, you know, 2 at one time. And she's like, she's nuts. She's not. She's lying. And I'm like, that's actually not true. I'm not lying. I have kids. You just don't see the other two.
Yeah.
And so she'll be like, oh, I don't remember. They were so young.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. But they think it's cool. I'm like, you know, cool. I had somebody else's babies and they're like, stop saying that. So also.
But they're teenagers.
That sounds like a teenager. Yeah.
Yes. But. She's been doing that a long time. She's been doing that since she's like 5 or 6. Stop telling people that you had somebody else's babies. So what was really interesting is when I would go to Walmart or go somewhere, you know, people just feel it's like you're a magnet when you're pregnant. You're just a magnet for the hands, the questions. I was at Keeneland at a work event and Aunt Holly was with me. And I remember walking through the doorway and this guy held the door for me, you know, and he was like, oh, what are you having? And I was like, one of each or something funny. I was like, oh, they're not mine. They're not mine. And she stayed back and told him my whole life story. And I was like, it's supposed to be funny.
Leave him wondering.
Yes. So I just
kind of have a mystery.
You know, I would be in Walmart, and they're like, oh, what are you having? I was like, I don't know. They're not mine. I'm not keeping them. You know, people would be like, oh, they really aren't mine. And then I just, you know, walk away. It's a fun factor. You feel the need to ask a total stranger what they're having.
Yeah.
And you don't even have anything going on there. Like, yeah. So, or I would be like, oh, I'm having a girl. And their eyes would like get as big as like silver dollars, you know, like, They're like, oh, she's awful big. Yeah, or the next day I'd be like, oh, I'm having a boy. And then I'd switch it up. Or I'd be like, oh, if I really wanted to have a conversation and I felt in the mood, I'd be like, oh, I'm having one of each. And they'd be like, oh, my God. I'm like, I'm not in for this. You know, but it's funny if you just leave them wondering.
Right?
Yeah.
She stayed back and, like, Holly stayed back and was like, oh, yeah, she's a surrogate.
Yeah, she's like, you can't do that. Actually, I can do that.
Yeah.
I literally can. I did it.
I would.
Yeah. I used to try to hide my belly under the table. And she's like, people are like, you got to stop doing that. Why? Is it a surprise? Because I'm surprised. We're all surprised.
So did you have a lot of family support during this time?
Yeah, I have a fairly large family, and mm-hmm. my family pretty much knows that I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. So they don't try to talk me out of anything. But yeah, like my family was all around. My husband at the time, super supportive. Like when I was on bed rest, you know, he tried mm-hmm. to help as much as he could. But my kids also are super attached to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was hard. It's like, you know, mama can't get up and get you all the things, that kind of stuff. But I had tons of support. I would say if you don't have a lot of support, it's not a huge deal. But sometimes you just want, like, a sounding board, or you just want somebody to talk to.
Absolutely.
About the process. The good news is if you go through an agency and do kind of like what I did, you meet lots of people that you can literally text or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. Like, I have a lot of them still on my Facebook. Like, I love to see where they're at in their life now and if they did it again. I know somebody who did it, like, 4 times.
Wow.
Like, I just don't think my body wants that in its life.
Yeah.
So I just, but you never felt alone if you used the agency, because your psychologist was one phone call away. Like when I knew that it was time for me to stop the process of being with the next couple, I made one phone call to my psychologist, and she was like, I completely understand. I understand. I will take care of everything. And she literally took care of everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. So that's why I would say, like, if you're going to do it, just go through the agency. It's just way more protection for you, mm-hmm. and people are here for you, and you'll never feel alone that way.
That's awesome. So that kind of ties into my last question, which is, what advice do you have for women who want to be gestational surrogates?
Do it.
Yeah.
You know, do it. It is a good time. You meet so many people. You create a bond, but not in a way that's like, that's mine. You create this totally different bond. And just make sure you do it in a way that somebody's looking out for you outside of you, right? Mm-hmm. Like, do it in a way that if you want to do it on your own, that's fine. Just remember, there's lots of things that could go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Probably should have the answers to most of the questions in advance. So, right. You know, protect yourself, but do it. Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being on. That's all I've got, unless you have anything to add, Kayla, or you have anything you want to add, Amanda?
No, I think I've said everything.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on and sharing your story. That's really amazing. Very kind and selfless thing for you to do.
I loved every bit of it.
That's so good.
There's not a moment that I would take back in all that. I learned how to grow up pretty quickly, though, I will tell you that. And it helped my family, and I'm glad I did it.
Good. That's amazing.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
Of course. Of course. We did too. So make sure to like and subscribe. Follow us on Insta, social, at Bubbles Brunchcast on Insta and TikTok. And then if you have any questions, comments, concerns, corrections, you know, topic suggestions, hit us up, bubblesbrunchcast@gmail.com. Of course, you can't really have corrections to someone else's story, but that's neither here nor there. hit us up, bubblesbrunchcast@gmail.com. And we are all ears. Thank you, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Well, see that ya. Was the last call for this episode of the Bubbles Brunchcast. Please subscribe and tune in next time. We will be serving it up all over again. Enjoy your week.